KCM. This is Radio Ghana.
Good evening, and you're welcome to Behind the News. My name is Agatha Samoa, and tonight, former First Lady Nana Akunedo Adjiman-Rawlings pays a surprised visit to the home of Nana Akufo-Addo. What was her mission there? We'll find out shortly. Conflicting reports on the UTAG strike. Has it been called off or not? UTAG President Dr. Anthony Simon says strike is still on. And Forestry Commission gets tough on destroyers of our flora and fauna. We'll get the details of all these stories and more on Behind the News tonight. Be my guest for the next 1 hour or so as we bring you all the latest in the world of news from Ghana and beyond. You can also join the discussions via text on 0266-677570. 0266-677570. Behind the News is live on Unique FM 95.7 in Accra and Obonu FM 96.5 in Tema. Star Ghana is proud to be associated with this program. The reaction of the petitioners and respondents after the Supreme Court verdict is seen by observers as a manifestation of how the country has embraced democracy. Many well-meaning Ghanaians have congratulated the NPP presidential candidate for the 2012 elections, Nana Akufo-Addo, on accepting the Supreme Court verdict, but no one saw this coming. Former First Lady Nana Akunedo Adjiman-Rawlings today went to the residence of Nana Akufo-Addo at Nima in Accra to commend him for putting Ghana first and humbly accepting the Supreme Court verdict. Mrs. Rawlings said there are many questions which need answers as far as the election petition ruling is concerned. Let's listen to Nana Akunedo Adjiman-Rawlings.
Made us all see that politics, yes, individuals, yes, that the nation comes before all of that. And to have put that before court at the time when you could have said to your partner that we've had a stolen verdict back in bracket, so let's move out there and try and take it. It would have been a very easy thing, but your feeling for the country, your status in the country, and for you to want MPP to be remembered that it is indeed a democratic platform. I think we all have here to come for. You, your lieutenant, Mr. Baumia, did a great job on TV. I think everybody was like, wow, who could have kept these figures in their head? So we have to thank you, and but through you, to all your lieutenants who actually helped open our eyes to the issue. The only thing that I would like to put before you as a lawyer and as a statesman is to explain things to Ghanaians, because people ask a lot that, oh, I think I'm saying that after spending a lot of money on equipment for verification, doesn't matter anymore. Is that what we're saying? We can now vote without verification. Are they saying this? Are they saying that? So if you listen to the radio stations, you get very depressed with the questions that, you know, innocently people are asking. We will need those of you who are lawyers to look at it and tell us, we the lay people, explain it to us so that we can understand it better.
That's former First Lady Nana Akunedo Adjiman-Rawlings. Let's also listen to Nana Akufo-Addo's response.
The verdict has come. I continue to agree with it. Business of explaining it, I think you're right. It's a duty that we have to expose the decision of the people of this country to understand exactly what it is that the judges have said. And we have that process in the days and weeks ahead. The Ghanaian people know exactly, not just for today, for tomorrow. They want to go down this path and get a better position. And that therefore is very useful to improve our electoral system. And all of that is all coming out of this perspective. And we will need to always focus on that.
Well, that was Nana Adudankwa Akufo-Addo. Now let's go to the phone lines and speak to Maxwell Opoku-Addo, who is a senior lecturer at the Ghana School of Law. Good evening, Mr. Opoku-Addo. You are welcome.
Thank you for having me. Good evening to your listeners. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks.
Good.
Well, Mr. Opoku-Addo, do you agree with Mrs. Rawlings that it is about time the politicians explain things properly to Ghanaians, because people are at a loss as to the proper meaning of the verdict, and that there are more questions begging for answers as far as the verdict is concerned?
Well, thank you for this question. I do not think that the demand was to politicians to explain, but rather to the people who have legal understanding explain all the intricacies of what has happened. And I think this is a legitimate concern. This is something that all of us, especially those who duty at from past justices of the court, those who are retired, lawyers, academics, legal academics, I think that it is extremely important that we interrogate this matter. And at least, though we cannot change the verdict or the judgment, we can't. But at least, we will be a disservice to this country if we fail to look at this thing for purposes of educating and also for purposes of posterity. We do not have to allow this case to be like another re-akoto in the history of constitutional law of Ghana. Therefore, I think it's a legitimate demand. Luckily, the decision and the reason, I'm told, came out this evening. In fact, some of us have been holding vigil, expecting the entire reason, and I'm told that they are out. I left my office and I'm told that they are out. I can assure you that a lot of people have interest in this. Not to question, we are not going to question the verdict, because the verdict has been given, and the lawyers even thanked the court and stated, as lawyers will do, that they are most obliged. Therefore, that is the decision of the highest court of the land, and we are all bound by it. But nothing prevents us from dissecting, line by line, looking at the reasons given for each of the issues that were raised. I think that we have to take the issues one by one, look at the reasons that were given, cases that were used in support, whether the cases are tenable or not tenable, and then we come out with our opinion. As for the opinion, we can express, but that will not change anything, but at least we need to express it.
Does it mean that now that the judgment is out, it will put to rest all these speculations and confusion, the various interpretations being given to it?
Ghanaians should be very careful. You see, history, I think since yesterday, some of us have restrained ourselves in looking at things that are in the media and people making comments and people even making allegations against others. Because if you recall, in Ghana, in the case of MPP versus Attorney General, which was the 31st December case, a similar thing happened. Something was read in court. One of the lawyers, who was also a journalist, heard something, went for the report, but not from the appropriate custody according to the court. He put it in the Chronicle. Then when the certified true copy came, that portion which was used was different from what was in the certified true copy. He was held before court for contempt. That is the case of Mensah Bozu versus Attorney General. And he was convicted of contempt and sentenced to 3 months imprisonment. So that's why people had to restrain themselves in not following the various speculations and until you get the certified true copy. It is extremely important, because if you rely on any other copy, the precedent of Mensah Bozu versus Attorney General could be used against you. But luckily, now that we have it, I think that now people can go ahead and look at it. I keep on saying, the lawyers will look at the legal aspect, but as I said, and I want to repeat, in any legal litigation, there are two sides. We have the legal issue, and then the factual issue. It just sits as a court of law and a court of fact. When it comes to law, you need certain legal understanding to dissect. But when it comes to factual basis, the judge's understanding of facts should be consistent with a layperson's understanding of facts. So, on the factual basis, you and I with people without legal education can look at it and understand why 1+1 in this case is not 2, because even for an ordinary person, 1+1 is 2. In such a situation, there should be consistency in the way we look at certain things. So therefore, you may go ahead, even as journalists, go ahead, look at it, and look at the factual, the commonsensical things. But when it comes to legal questions, sometimes that is where we leave it to the lawyers to come out in explaining certain things. But as I said, when it is fact, if something is a fact, the fact as you are judged is the same as a fact as any other person. So yes, people will have to interrogate, but please, we should do it without insult. You do it without name calling. We should do it without scandalizing the court, because that is not fair.
Well, again, Mrs. Rowland said that people are confused by the ruling and are speculating what the ruling means for biometric voting in Ghana. But are there implications of the Supreme Court verdict for future elections in the country?
Well, until I read the reason, I will not be able to say anything, because, of course, there were claims for statutory violations. So, therefore, you may be right. If majority has dismissed, for example, pink sheet without a signature, you may be right to ask, what did they say about it? I want to look at the reason. Maybe they said that thin sheet without a signature is maybe an irregularity, but. So until you get the but, you will not be able to say that they said it is not an irregularity. You see, so that's why you need to know what reason they gave. Indeed, if the reason was that it is not a violation, then what Mrs. Rowlands is saying becomes tenable, because then somebody just asked me what will be the value of a marriage certificate signed by witnesses without the parties themselves, the husband and wife. They don't sign. Their parents sign. If their parents sign, is it valid marriage certificate? Therefore, I can answer this question only if I read the reasons why the judges came to the conclusion they came, that notwithstanding the fact that there's a constitutional edict that presiding officer Shah signed, if they say, but maybe it's a sign by a party agent, which can be equated to a witnessing a marriage unsigned by the parties themselves, the husband and wife don't sign, and the witnesses signing, will it be a valid marriage certificate? In the same way, then we can draw an analogy and then discuss. Because if a contract by parties and the parties don't sign, but their witnesses sign, can you enforce it against the parties? All these things will come out when we read the judgment. And I can assure you that it won't be long. We will deal with it by looking at the issue by issue, reasons given, cases cited, the comparative analysis, and then make conclusions. Conclusions what will not change the decision. That one, let us emphasize this. Whatever we say will not change it. But whatever we say may be useful in the future for people to look at all these things and the way we look at how we do things.
Well, Mr. Opokwadume, I want to thank you for your time with us tonight.
You're always welcome. Thank you.
Maxwell Opokwadume is a senior lecturer at the Ghana School of Law. And so what do political scientists make of the visit of the former First Lady to the residence of the NPP 2012 presidential candidate? Dr. Evans Agridako is a political science lecturer at the University of Ghana and is joining us on the line to share his thoughts on this subject. Good evening, Doctor, and you are welcome.
Good evening.
Well, the visit of Nana Akufo-Addo Adjumanrolins to Nana Akufo-Addo, is it a symbolic gesture to show that our democracy has matured?
Yeah, thank you very much, and good evening to your team and listeners. You know, we have all indicated in the last few days, especially in the prelude to the verdict, the Supreme Court verdict, that there is a need for us to be reconciliatory. There is a need for us to reach across the other opponents. There's a need for us to close our ranks as a people. There's a need for us to build consensus. There's a need for us to see our diversity tap in opportunities that diversity brings, among others. By and large, you have been preaching peace, basically. And that, I mean, that is why issues about winner takes all, the issue of tolerance, the issue of power sharing, and all those issues have come to the fore. So fundamentally, I think we need to move on as a people. We need to more or less move away from the politics of vindictiveness and politics of vendetta and politics of witch hunting and politics of name calling to looking at issues that will unite us. Be much more, measured. Make sure we, as I said, we reach across the aisle to indicate to our even those who do not agree with us that yes, we are one people, as we normally say, with a common destiny, but we simply do not agree on perhaps the principles that must govern this nation. But we have a simple mission, and the mission really is to ensure that we develop this country so we can continue to live as dignified people, and then posterity will come and enjoy, you know, better than we are doing now. I think that must be our call, that we must improve the system such that even when we have left, those who will come and inherit us will enjoy much more dignified systems that we. So I see the visit as quite appropriate. Normally, people will say that what was their motive, for instance? Is it because she decided to look for or to fight for the NDC slot? Is that why he's doing that, among others? I wouldn't want us to put a spin on it, per se, but look at it in terms of people who belong to different political persuasions who, in times of need, or in times like this where we seem to be disagreeing on some key fundamental issues, will reach across and dialogue. And I believe that when we are able to do that, it sends strong signals to party people, to, you know, key activists, and what has become popular as school soldiers in recent, you know, times, that look, hey, the key actors, the prime movers, are dialoguing. So what is the point in we perhaps trying to slash each other's throat here and there, confusion and cause mayhem in our political system? So for me, it sends strong signal that we are increasingly maturing as a people, as a democratic people, because I have always argued that we ought to be Democrat at heart, and that if we are Democrat at heart, that will actually permeate the institutions even that we build, and that will make sure that will actually sanitize our politics to a very large extent. If we change our attitudes, it will be difficult for us to make progress.
Well, Doc, you think we are maturing, but if this has been in the past, people would have said Nana Akufo-Addo was visiting the enemy's camp. You have talked about reconciliation and unity, but can't we read any meaning beyond this visit? For instance, we need also to spite the NDC.
Oh, no, why not? I mean, people are free to make, you know, their own assertions here and there, and look at the implications and so on. Some may argue that, well, he's literally dining with the enemy, sort of. And so they will argue that maybe what we normally say in public, what you call international politics, the enemy of your enemy is your friend. So, but basically, of course, some party functionaries want to figure out what the key intentions are and so on. And then, of course, they will take it from the decision over the, I think last year, when Nana himself decided that he was going to contest for the ultimate slot in the NDC. So they want to look at it from that angle. And they have every right to do these analyses. You see, one of the things that democracy allows us to do as individuals is that we can even disagree with unpopular opinions. Or even when people have opinions, no matter how unpopular those opinions are, we still should allow them to make them. Because that is in the spirit of tolerance. Even when you disagree with somebody, he also has the space, almost beginning the space, to express those disagreements and so on. So, yes, why not? A lot of implications could be drawn from this visit. But I want to see it from a very positive light, that these are individuals, key actors within our body politic, who are now telling the rank and file, you and I, the citizenry generally, that look, we are making progress. We are maturing as a democracy. We want to be Democrat at heart. We want to reach across the aisle. We want to demonstrate to the rest of the world that, you know, it's possible to even sit down with opponents, diametrically opposed, you know, opponents, to see eye to eye, figure out what we can do for ourselves, look at areas, gray areas that we can possibly fine-tune among others, and by and large, demonstrate to the teaming supporters that it's not about war, it's about Georgia. And even when we disagree, let us see how best we can harmonize our interests as a people and move forward. I think for me, that is how I want to see the visit. And I will not fault anybody who also decides to take other angles, other perspectives, you know. Why not?
Doc, as a political scientist, were you shocked that the NPP 2012 presidential candidate, Nana Akufo-Addo, was quick to accept the verdict immediately after the ruling?
I was gratified. I was humbled. I thought that he had moved into a realm of what I would call not a lesser mortal, but he's moved to the realm of statesmanship. You know, a statesman is somebody who has expertise, ideas, etc., and will want to put these things at the disposal of the citizenry, the fate of the citizenry. You know, we have gone through a very checkered political history, but thank God we have been able to stabilize our system coming from 1993, when we all decided to submit to the 1992 Constitution. We've gone through series of elections, 1992, 96, 2000, 2004, 2008. There have been progressive improvements. Why not? There have been certain gray areas. Why not? There have been people who have decided not to even accept results. We have had, you know, stolen verdicts written, among others. We have people who had accused, you know, our government, you know, of having, you know, rigged elections, but stopped short of going to court, to ultimate, to seek redress, among others. We had some failed attempts and so on. So we got to a situation where we, from December 28, when we had to come down to, you know, August, you know, 29, a solid month. It's been a very treacherous journey, very checkered one, but it's been a learning for all of us. You know, we have instances where we have all been educated about the dynamics of the Supreme Court, the powers of the state versus the power of individuals. We have situations where excesses along the lines have been, you know, trimmed, and some people who tended to abuse the system had to be called to order, you know, by these contempt cases, among others. We've all been educated, and we've had the rare opportunity, very unique opportunity, of watching Supreme Court proceedings live, the first ever, you know, unprecedented in the history of this country. And all these things have really contributed to enhancing the quality of public education perhaps that we'll have. At the end of the day, we're educating our people. So for me, the timing was right. There was so much tension in the system. He based his conception on information that was available to him at the time. And I think that his concession, to a very large extent, and if you look at well-meaning Ghanaians and even outsiders who are showering praises on us, and particularly Nanado, for conceding, it indicates that they recognize how delicate, you know, the issue was. And so for me, his concession was timely, and it helped, you know, deal with the the tension that existed at the time. Yes, for him at all.
But like others also say that if he knew he will accept the verdict, he should have done so when the EC declared the results and holding the whole country to ransom.
Oh no, I mean you we have all agreed to live by a constitution. We have all agreed that those who are not happy with the existing systems must activate the constitutionally, you know, mandated processes. Now we see there is a fine line between peace and justice. Now when we want to create cemetery stability, and we are saying that God will provide, and that those who are even not happy with the system must just go and sleep, we will be undermining our system. We know the court system provides an avenue for people to seek redress, of course. It's not always that you are happy with verdict. But hey, I mean, when you go into court or when you are taking a case, there are two risks. Risk of failure and risk of success. And so when you weigh the options, you look at the facts that you have, you look at the evidence available, you do serious, you know, analysis of the situation, and you think that there's a possibility that you can win, why not? You test the loss. Because one of the ways by which we can also even improve ourselves as a democratic people is to ensure that the institutions really work. So when people are not happy and they decide that, well, they will want to activate the procedures that we have put in place, for me, it demonstrates that increasingly we're having confidence in our institution. That's critical for institutional survival and what we call the path dependency that we want our institution to endure. Because then the institutions will be validated. When even you are not even happy with the system, you must be prepared to work with it. So why not? I mean, because it was quite close. And see, we don't have to look at it in terms of the benefit really only to Nana, because there may be a positive spillover effect in that it will provide a EC. Well, the others who have argued that the EC has always been reforming and so on, so we didn't need to go to court to reform anyway. You see, when you go to court, it gives, you know, it raises the need for reform to a new pedestal, onto a new platform, and the need for various reforms, it will become much more urgent. And it gives us, all of us, something to chew, something to reflect on, and the way by which we can say that, look, these are gray areas. And I believe that as the lawyer, you know, indicated, the law lecturer indicated, when the full, you know, rulings are available, then, of course, the legal luminaries and legal brains who interrogate, and, of course, those with laymen may also have a look and see what reasons have been adduced,
but then,
various positions that our justices have taken, and then that can inform policy issues going forward as a people. Yes.
But then, Doug, briefly, what do you make of the aftermath of the verdict and the commentaries being run on the outcome of the verdict, especially the alleged attack on the judiciary and unsavory comments from political commentators?
Yeah, well, you see, we are all in trained to be defended by what we say. We've all been trained to be measured. But think that increasingly we're not advising ourselves that there's no need for us to descend into the gutters. Politics have been sold. We have to base our analysis on issues, and if you disagree, state the reasons why you disagree, instead of just descending and on somebody and being personally attacked and so on and so forth, based on issues. Of course, you know, the aftermath, yes, some MPP functionaries were not happy that Nana, you know, perhaps conceded the way the time and the way he did. Of course, that is also within their right. You know, within the party, I've always argued that there is something called an iron law of oligarchy. No matter how democratic a system is, power almost always revolves around very few people. So, of course, you would expect that he may have done some key consultations, some key prime movers, what I will call blue-eyed boys and girls, perhaps in the political party. And then, of course, we'll have to go ahead and so on. But that doesn't mean that there will be unanimity, you know, as far as that decision is concerned. But I think, by and large, if you accept that this is what our party says, or this is what our leader says, you grant him that privilege to say what he said. And then, of course, if the party has any position, like what they have said, that they will want to study, you know, the rulings carefully, and then advise the party. That is the wisest thing that a party, you know, any party could do, because you need to do that, you know, serious diagnosis. And then if you decide that, well, we don't even think I raise you, that will even inform the party what type of strategies they themselves will have to put in place, because we will need to fight another day. And going into 2016, and if they want to go to 2016 and really pose a serious challenge to the NDC, then it means that they may have to go back to the drawing board, re-strategize, reorganize, revamp certain things, you know, reactivate, not everyone, but rejuvenate some of the key issues that they have, the training programs they have, the recruitment of polling agents, the quality of polling agents, etc., even the loyalty of the polling agent, among others, the various structures. They need to go back to the grassroots, how they will package their campaign, the issues that they will flag, what diversity they will bring, what is the quality of the manifesto. So a whole lot, a gamut of issues will be brought on board to really maybe reposition the party to offer a very safe position come next 2016. Yes.
Dr. Evans Adri-Dako is a political science lecturer at the University of Ghana. Many thanks for your time with us. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana in Accra. Behind the News is also live on Radio Central 92.5 in Cape Coast and Twin City 94.7 in Takoradi. There seems to be a split on the UTAC front on their ongoing strike, whereas reports have it that the Legon chapter of UTAC has called off the strike. Members from other public universities are pressing on with the action. So why this divide on the UTAC front? And for answers to these and many more, we are joined on the line by Dr. Anthony Simons, President of UTAC. Good evening, Doc, and you're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Good evening.
Good evening. Well, we'd like you to confirm to us, are you still on strike?
Yes, we are.
But then we have reports of the Legon chapter of UTAC calling off their strike. How true is this?
Yeah, it is true, but that is an unfortunate situation. Actually, you see, what happened was that last night, from 7 o'clock to 11:30, we held a NEC meeting. Now, each branch is to go back and inform its constituents about NEC's decision. Now, Legon went, and then instead of informing the national decision, they went and then discussed the decision and decided to vote on the decision, which was wrong. And I don't know whether that was orchestrated or what. It happened that there and then they decided to vote on the national decision. And they voted, and it went in favor that they should go back to the classroom. So we are not so much disturbed. At least we have 9 universities which are still on strike. We've only gone back to the classroom. That is okay with us. And we will press on until our demands are addressed.
Well, Doc, there seems to be confusion within the mother union. Why this confusion? Does it look like a split on the front?
Come again, please.
I was saying that there seems to be confusion within the mother union. And why?
No, there isn't. There isn't at all. It is Legon. Legon is the problem. There is no confusion at all. We are united. We are together. And then we've resolved that we'll keep on pressing. Because we are doing that for the common goal and the common good of UTAC. We are not looking at individual gains.
Well, Doc, so is Legon undermining the UTAC front?
Well, it looks as if so.
So what is being done to resolve that situation?
Well, NEC will meet very soon, and then we'll take a decision on Legon.
But then who really takes the final decision within the UTAC structure?
It is NEC, National Executive Committee, which is made up of 4 representatives from each campus. So you could imagine all around Ghana, every public university presented 4 members. and we took a common decision. And so if you go back, you are simply to report. You don't go back to go and re-debate. You know, the very issues which took us more than 4 hours to debate and arrive at the conclusion. Okay, so that was the mistake they made. And I don't know. They couldn't, well, out of 900 and almost 900 lecturers, about 100 and something met, and they took that decision.
But now, the vice chancellors of Ghana and National Security intervened to have your grievances resolved. Does it mean your concerns have still not been resolved or addressed?
You see, National Security came in, and it's almost about 1 month ago, because we met them on the 5th of August. And they said that they needed to go and then consult with the president and get back to us. That is the end of their story. They went back and nothing has come out of it. Then BCG stepped in, and we are grateful for that step they took. Okay. Now they came in and said that we are committed, you know, to pay the difference for you. But, you know, they also held a meeting last Thursday. And out of the meeting, it came out that they don't have the authority. There is no authority instructing them to pay the difference. Okay, so we have taken a standard. We also said that they should give us a written document, because when we met, it was a verbal agreement, gentleman's agreement. Then we said that, no, give us a written document so that another time when there is a problem, we can present that document to you. Now, the document that they presented to us, it does not sufficiently and then explicitly commit the visas, you know, to the payment. And so what we said was that they should, you know, really give us a document which says that we are committed to pay. Because, you know, one of the points was that they stated it is the responsibility of the government to pay book and research, which we agree. The second point was that we are going to partner with UTA to the realization of the said figure. And then there was another point which said that we're going to work with UTA and government to make sure that the difference is paid. When you give us such statement, it means that you come in for shared responsibility. And we say we are employees. We don't have any shared responsibility here. Who is going to pay the money? And so to us, that is not a commitment enough. So they should give us another letter which really says that either they are saying we will pay no matter what, or we are seeking for mandate from government to pay. And so we are saying we're taking this stand until they get the mandate from government, because we feel that is the right thing. Government should instruct them to use their IGF or whatever to pay. That is the right thing, so that they won't have any difficulty. And if they are going to use the IGF to pay, then it means that because they have the backing of government will refund the money to them. So it is in the interest of the universities themselves that UTAC is taking the stand, okay, to make sure that whatever they give us, government will, you know, kind of give it back. And so for Legon to go and take that stand, it is so disappointing.
Well, so what action within the limits of UTAC's constitution can be taken against your members at Legon who you believe have betrayed your cause?
Well, for now, I think in the heat of the moment, I don't want emotions to, you know, crowd my comments. So I will leave that. We will call next meeting very soon. When we get there, we'll be able to, you know, take a proper decision.
Doc, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight.
Yeah, thank you.
Dr. Anthony Simons is president of UTAG, and Mrs. Stella Moore is head of public affairs, University of Ghana, Legon. Good evening, Mrs. Amoa. You are welcome.
Thank you. Good evening.
Well, can you confirm or deny that the lecturers at Legon have resumed work?
Well, official lectures will start tomorrow, 4th of September.
But then what has been the impact of the strike on the academic calendar?
Well, it is obvious that a delay of 4 weeks will have an effect on the academic calendar, because teaching should have started 4 weeks ago. So it's obvious that it will be impactful on the academic, on the institution as University of Ghana, and of course our students. We have international students, we have Ghanaian students, and we also have research institutions, and we have a lot of collaborative partnerships with a lot of international and local and sub-regional bodies. So it is a shared impact, not just on the institution, but on our collaborators and partners.
Well, so to what extent have you adjusted the calendar to make up for the period lost?
Well, we had to take a proactive stand that if the UTAD strike should continue, what will be, what would we do as an institution? And it is obvious that we are going to come up with a revision of the academic calendar. It is certain that we will revise the academic calendar so that we can take care of the weeks that have been lost as a result of the strike action.
But then, what assurances are you giving us that the lecturers will not resume their strike?
Well, I think that UTAG Legon is a chapter of the UTAG National, and our members have voted to go back to the classrooms, and this is assurance enough that they will resume teaching, and of course the students will be there also to resume their learning.
Well, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight.
Thank you.
Stella Amwa is Head of Public Affairs, University of Ghana, Legon. Now let's read some of your text messages. And Eric Imankesin says, well, the counsel for the petitioners also be right in associating the judges who voted against them with the winning party. And Akweni Chelsea in Kolegon says, we, the members of the NPP, are strongly behind Anadu. 2016 is just around the corner. And this one says, Ghanaians like unnecessary criticism too much. We must stop that. It does not help. And that's from Thomas Toku, Tema Community AIDS. And Joy Lai in Cantonment says, I don't see the justification of seeing Anado won 2012 elections with minority in parliament. And Peter Nyeni says, I agree with the former First Lady that things must be explained to the lay people. Why should we use state funds in acquiring biometric machines when some people can still vote without being verified? And Abuba from Nima says, what matters in Ghana is power but not law. The law takes its due course only against powerless societies. Many thanks for your text messages. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana Accra. Behind the News is also live on Radio Savannah 91.2 in Tamale, Radio BA, R93.5 in Sinai. As a way of protecting the country's forest reserves from destruction and illegal exploitation, the Forestry Commission has empowered 30 officers to prosecute offenders who flout the country's forest laws. The officers have further support from the Attorney General's office. On Behind the News tonight, we ask whether the latest move compromises the position of forestry guards who have protected the country's forests for years, and why the Attorney General's office is not taking up the prosecution of offenders but having to tax another group to do so. And joining us to find answers to these questions is the Minister of Lands and Natural Resources, Alhaji Inusa Fuseni. Good evening, Alhaji, and you're welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so very much.
Well, Alhaji, why tax a 30-member prosecuting team instead of allowing the Attorney General's office to do the prosecution?
Well, in principle, it's the Attorney General's office that is doing the prosecution. The law allows the Attorney General's office to give a fiat to any body of people or institution to prosecute cases that involve some criminality. And that is why you will find the police prosecuting cases for and on behalf of the Attorney General. Mind you, the police is part of the executive and not the judiciary. But because of the dwindling numbers of lawyers in the Attorney General's office and the heavy tax of having to prosecute numerous cases, the Attorney General gives fiat. You recall that in the old days, the sanitary inspectors also had a fiat from the Attorney General's office to prosecute cases involving sanitation matters. And so what the Forestry Commission has done is to request the Attorney General's office to give the Forestry Commission a fiat to train its officers, principally because the officers appreciate the values and norms of the Forestry Commission. They understand the need to protect the forest resources of this country, and it is expected that they will put in much effort and zeal in prosecuting these cases so as to serve as deterrent for people who want to engage in those illegalities.
Well, in all this, what would be the role of the forest guards?
Well, these are two different roles. The forest guards are protecting, they protect the forest. So when a forest guard comes across or encounters a person who is engaged in an illegality, like illegal logging or a hunting of wildlife within the forest reserve, such a forest guard would arrest the perpetrator and hand him over to the police for the docket to be prepared, and the 30 officers trained, they form the initial batch of people who will be doing the prosecution for and on behalf of the Forestry Commission. So they hand over the case to the the prosecutors, and they prosecute it for and on behalf of the Attorney General.
But then, do you agree with me that this is not the first time the issue of prosecuting people who illegally exploit the country's forest reserves has come up? But how sure are you that this 30-member prosecutors will be efficient to minimize, if not totally stop, those who illegally exploit the country's forest reserves?
That is right. It is not the first time that the attempts have been made to prosecute people who engage in some illegalities concerning the exploitation of our natural resources, particularly forest resources. But the statistics show that even though many people are arrested and sent to the court, we secure, in most cases, no conviction or less convictions. The cases are normally abandoned. Sometimes the prosecuting officers show remarkable lack of interest in prosecuting the matter. And that is why the Forestry Commission, working together with the Minister of Lands and Natural Resources, thought it wise to train its own officers in how to prosecute, because that is their core function, to protect the forest resources of this country. So it is believed that these people, having elected to work for the Forestry Commission and by extension the Minister of Lands and Natural Resources, will put in much effort and determination to be able to secure convictions of people who engage in illegality.
Well, allegations are that some of the forest guards even aid those who engage in some of the illegal activities in the forest. How are you checking these forest guards so as not to fall foul of the law?
Well, it requires monitoring and supervision. I can tell you that the Forestry Commission has stepped up its game to arrest people who collaborate with perpetrators of forest crimes to evade the law. But it requires the total collaboration of all Ghanaians. The forest resources serve all of us, not only the forest guards. They serve all of us. A forest in an area cleans the environment, serves as a resource for other timber products or other less known resources which are harvested from the forest. And so it is our collective responsibility, and that was why this year when we were celebrating the International Year of the Forest in Tamale, we celebrated it under the theme Protecting the Forest, My Responsibility. So anybody who encounters a forest guard who is conniving, collaborating, assisting, abetting any person to commit an illegality in the forest can report such a forest guard to the Forestry Commission or to officers of the Minister of Lands and Natural Resources or any well-meaning Ghanaians, and then the matter will be taken up.
Well, Alhaji, what measures is the ministry taking to stop the illegal logging of the country's timber by alleged Ivorians?
Well, we have not abated in our determination to mitigate, stop, or in any way lessen the unregulated exploitation of our timber resources or forest resources. We will continue to exercise the maximum care and attention in protecting the forest resources. But like I said earlier, it requires the collaboration of everybody. Even the we, those working at the Ministry of Lands and Natural Resources, or those working at the Forestry Commission, require some monitoring and supervision. And that is why I say that to be able to have effective monitoring and supervision, everybody must be, a watcher or a watchman over the brother.
Well, I do want to thank you for your time with us tonight.
Thank you. Thank you so very much.
Alhaji Nisa Fuseni is the Minister of Lands and Natural Resources, and we are also joined on the line by Mohammed Asau, who is an environmentalist and a lecturer at the University for Development Studies, Tamale. Good evening, sir, and welcome to the program.
Good evening, Manchester. How are you?
I'm very well. Do you see this measure to be effective, considering the many interventions governments over the years have taken to protect the country's forests from those who illegally exploit the forest reserves?
Yes, I think, let me just say good evening to the minister. I think this is a very important step that the country is taking. And considering the fact that the forest sector has really suffered a lot since 1900, it will interest you to know that Ghana has lost over 7 million hectares. From 1900, we had about 8 million hectares of forest, and up to now, we have left with only 1.6 million. And that is a serious worry to we, those who work in the forest sector, and particularly for the development of this nation in the future, because there are other African countries now we cannot count of forest in those areas. So this is a very important step the ministry is taking. But as I say, as you are asking about the sustainability or the practicability of this particular move, I have one or few reservations, and I have always said that it is not going to be possible for any single approach to work in the Ghana forest sector. I'm saying this because if you look at the Ghana forest sector, looking at from the 1994 Forest and Wildlife Policy and the current revised policy, we have really not been able to let the communities that forestry or the communities in which the forests are really located take a very important role in the forest governance of this country. You will be surprised that the Ghana forest sector has been timberized. And we always say it's timberized because the focus has always been timber. And as a result, we have left out a lot of other things that have made it impossible for most of our laws to work. If you look at the VPA, the Voluntary Partnership Agreement procedure with Ghana and the EU, if there are a lot of recommendations that we need to refine our forest sector laws. And I think that is in the progress. It is not as fast as we expect as stakeholders in the forest sector.
Mm.
But as you will recall, there have been this type of initiative, as you recall, you indicated that there have been this type of initiative.
Yeah.
The main reason why they don't work is that we don't collaborate with the other stakeholders, particularly the community level. I always take example of countries like Zambia and Burkina Faso, where the communities have been made to be part of the forest sector governance. The communities are interested because they stand to gain so much from the forest. The laws are made such a way that they incorporate communities' responsibilities. So now we have about 30 of these prosecutors that have been trained. Now we are expected to see them work at the community level. The question is, how are they going to work with the traditional authority? I've been in the Western region sometimes where some of the chiefs will tell you or the community people will tell you that they have never seen their cocoa trees being stolen. The reason is that the person who is taking care of cocoa is benefiting from the cocoa and will always protect it. The timber does not really benefit the community people because the share the community people get is so negligible to an extent that the community people sometimes voluntarily allow the illegal loggers to come in. And they benefit from the illegal logger because he will in turn give him something that is more better than what the state will give to him as a community member.
But then,
so the issue Yes, my sister.
What is the guarantee that the 30-member prosecutors will live up to expectation?
That is the challenge. I'm building the whole argument from the historical development of it and now questioning. And I think at the end of the day, every Ghanaian will question as to how best they can work. Yes, it is important that we establish them. There are important steps that the ministry is taking and the Forestry Commission is taking. I know it's because of the challenges that we have faced all over the year, and they are trying many approaches. But this approach is good, but they need to incorporate other measures that are already ongoing. For instance, the chiefs and the traditional authorities at the local community level are very important to work, make these prosecutors work. Because in any case, I mean, you can only prosecute somebody if the person is brought forth. So who brings the person, who is committing the crime, and who is voluntarily reporting the person is important to look at. So it is important to see how best we can really get the people who are perpetrating the crimes in the forest. And as I was building the argument, if we are not able to get the community people to be part of the whole process, in which they will be voluntarily giving information that we have seen this person burning the bush somewhere, we have seen this person cutting a timber at this location, and therefore they can really have that role to play. Also, we need to let the community people even understand this procedure. Who and how do they report this case? That is something that probably is not yet clear. Yes, the prosecutors have been trained, but as to how they will get the information to get the people to prosecute is something that needs to be looked at if they want this thing to work.
All right, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight.
Thank you very much, Manchester.
Mohammed Asai is an environmentalist and a lecturer at the University for Development Studies. Let's read some of your text messages. And Rita Chumwa, University of Cape Coast, says, may God touch the hearts of all UTAG members to consider the discomforts we students are facing. We are your sons and daughters. And Monica Kons in Avungo says, UTAG should pass their grievances through the right channel and stop behaving like people who want to sabotage the government. Many thanks for your text messages. And this is where we wrap up for tonight's edition of the program. Francis Darko and Hannah Owusu Bempa controlled the sounds, and my producers were Christopher Siedu, Edmund Tete, Phyllis Coffey, and John Pobi. Mercy Sowah-read the summaries, and my name is Agatha Sama, and you have a lovely night.